Good morning. Merry Christmas. Luke chapter 2, verses 10 through 12. Don't be afraid. Listen. I bring good news, news of great joy, news that will affect all people everywhere. Today, in the city of David, a liberator has been born for you. He is the promised anointed one, the supreme authority, and you will know you have found him when you see a baby wrapped in a blanket, lying in a feeding trough. Jesus' kingdom comes as Jesus came in the middle of a mess. My name is Nate. And you guys don't really know me, but you know my dad, so that's cool. He's a cool guy. If you would, you may have guessed it, we are going to be spending time in Luke chapter 2, so you can turn there, you can turn on your Bibles, or you can open them, whatever your choice there. But Luke chapter 2, I'm honored to preach at East Madison this morning. It's a joy. And I thought, you know, we might as well share a little Dad Chris Bob Ray Christmas story for you guys to get us started. And so I tell you, every Christmas that we celebrate together as a family, my dad, before we open gifts and do a gift exchange, we always read the Christmas story. And I cannot remember Dad ever, in recent years, I can't remember Dad being able to read it without shedding a tear. There's always tears. Because this story is the most beautiful, best story in the world. And so that is your pastor, which I'm thankful that he's here. And I'm thankful he's my dad. Wave of emotion. Let's keep going. My goal this morning is to take the sentimental snuggie off of the Christmas story. It to paint the age-old story with fresh paint and in fresh light on a fresh canvas. Because a lot of times this can just be nostalgia central. It can just be the story that makes us feel nice and cozy on the inside. And we think about Linus quoting it on the stage, telling Charlie Brown what's up. And that's not necessarily wrong, but I want us to get it anew, as if we were reading it the first time. So, most of the time, preachers do not have the opportunity to manhandle infants as part of their Christmas sermons. But if it's their own kid, they can do whatever they want. And so my kid is 2 months old, not quite a baby, but still pretty stinking young. And so she's going to be doing just fine. And if she cries, great, because that'll give us, I want it to feel like this Christmas story, it's interruptive. It's different. Things didn't go as planned. And so it's going to be okay if we have a crying baby this morning. It'll also be okay if you sleep the whole time too. But I think a lot of us are just used to the cadence and the familiarity of the story. And so to shake things up, not only do I plan on trying to give us a fresh understanding, but I've chosen a translation of the Bible to use this morning called The Voice. I just want to mix it up. Because we might be used to our ESV or our NIV or our NLT or whatever, but I just want to use something that maybe we haven't heard it in that translation before, just to, again, get a new feeling on this thing. Get out of the cadence and out of the familiarity and into the freshness and the incredibleness of this story. So Luke chapter 2, you can read along in your own translations, but Luke chapter 2, verses 1 through 7, this is from The Voice. Around the time of Elizabeth's amazing pregnancy and John's birth, the emperor in Rome, Caesar Augustus, required everyone in the Roman Empire to participate in a massive census. The first census since Quirinius had become governor of Syria. And each person had to go to his or her ancestral city to be counted. And the voice gives us a little bracketed commentary that I've included on the screen. And you guys can read it along there, but I'm going to read it because I think this is important. This political background isn't incidental. It's crucial to the story. Conquering nations in the ancient world work in various ways. Some brutally destroy and plunder the nations they conquer. Some conquer people as slaves or servants, but other empires allow the people to remain in their land and work as before, but with one major change. The conquered people have to pay taxes to their rulers. The purpose of a census, like the one Luke describes, is to be sure that everyone is appropriately taxed and knows who's in charge. The purpose of the census is to remind the Jewish people, Rome is still in charge here. You guys are still under the oppressive thumb of big boy Rome. So deal with it. That's the purpose of the census here. Let's keep reading. Mary's fiancé Joseph from Nazareth in Galilee had to participate in the census in the same way everyone else did. Because he was a descendant of King David, his ancestral city was Bethlehem, David's birthplace. So Mary, who was now late in her pregnancy, that the messenger Gabriel had predicted, accompanied Joseph. And while in Bethlehem, she went into labor and gave birth to her firstborn son. And she wrapped the baby in a blanket and laid him in a feeding trough because the inn had no room for them. On March 18th of 2015, I arrived home from a week-long mission trip that I went on with my church, and Robin had prepared a card for me. And she hands it to me. And I open the card. Well, I see the card, and it says, "Bet you're feeling proud and glad." And I knew a word that rhymes with glad. And so I open the card, and it says that soon you'll be a brand new dad. And it was on that day that I found out that we were going to be parents for the first time. Found out that Robin had already been to the doctor. And at the doctor, they gave us a due date of November 25th. And so once you know your baby's due date, you begin to prepare. And so we began to prepare. And in June 2015, I began to prepare by beginning our basement bedroom remodeling project. A lot of blood, sweat, tears, and, if I'm honest, cuss words went into that basement bedroom remodel project. In October 2015, we began to prepare for the birth of our first child by taking classes, baby classes. We took three classes preparing for childbirth. We took a class for infant CPR. We took a class for breastfeeding. I bet I can tell you a lot about breastfeeding. And on November 11th, if you're keeping track, our due date was November 25th. So on November 11th, we go in for our 38-week appointment, and our doctor says, "That baby's right there." And she says something about, "If something's leaking or something, your baby's coming today." And we looked at Robin said, "Today?" And she looked at me, and my resting heart rate's like around 70, 75, and I think it like shot up to 160, and I said, "Today?" And prepared or not, we realized this baby was coming soon. I finished the basement bedroom that night in time for my mother-in-law, who changed her flight for the next day. And on Friday, November 13th at 3:09 a.m., what followed were the most traumatic 4 minutes of my entire life. And I did say my life. So let me back up and explain something for a moment. I'm going to be telling the birth story of our little one, Mina, because her birth story at least gets us a little closer to maybe where we're going today with Mary and Joe versus Tacy's birth story. Our first child and our second child birth stories were quite different. Our first child, Robin did this whole thing unmedicated. What a boss. And the second time, that was our desire, but some stuff out of our control, she ended up having an epidural. So the first pregnancy was terror, fear filled. And the second childbirth experience, Robin says, once she's dilated to 10, she says, "We should have brought a deck of cards." And so but because Mina is 2, and because Tacy is little, like Jesus would have been, Tacy gets to be the prop for this sermon. Thank you, Tacy. At 1 a.m., our labor begins. Robin's labor begins. She starts having contractions. And at 3:03 a.m., she has 3 successive contractions that are right on top of each other that, like, buckle her to the ground. And she was on this birthing bob. She was doing her thing. And she sort of kind of holds herself up on the bed, and she says, "I can't not push." And then she looks at me and the nurse, and she says, "I want the drugs." And I turn to the nurse and I say, "Give her the drugs." And the nurse says, "Get her on the table." And so we get her on the table, and I'm like, Robin has a look of total fear, like sheer terror. And she's screaming at decibel levels I did not know were humanly possible. And so this is unknown. She's never done this before. This was scary. I was freaking out on the inside, but because the nurses were cool as cats, I knew things were going to be okay. If they weren't cool as cats, I would have lost it. And so I'm trying to keep it together for her. And Robin says she knew that we were close to having Mina when she saw me crying. And the emotions of the moment, like the total, like I can't even explain the total fear and terror looking, coming, exuding from Robin and penetrating my very soul, that happening, as well as this mix of intensity and beauty and heartache, and your heart is full. And then it was to that point in time is the craziest, most emotional, intense, beautiful moment of my life. And Wilhelmina Noelle Ray enters into the world at 8 pounds, 13 ounces. I told you her mom was a rock star. And when Mina took her first breath, she threw her fist in the air. So, but here's the thing. In the middle of the fear and the terror, I never felt unsafe. I never felt unsafe. I felt like the hospital was filled with nurses and doctors who knew what they were doing. I felt like Robin's mom and my parents were just down the hall. But I never felt unsafe. But there's nothing that can prepare you completely for birth. Until you've done it, you haven't done it, and you don't know what it's like. And so I wonder what it felt for Mary and Joseph. Right? Because I am working under the assumption that they had somewhat of a plan in place. Right? They were doing their own sort of preparing. And all of a sudden, there's this census. I bet you anything they were not preparing to be doing any back-breaking travel late in Mary's pregnancy. Nazareth to Bethlehem is a 3-hour drive. Drive, right? A drive. And yet they have to walk this, journey this together. I bet you anything they were not preparing for doing any back-breaking travel. And I bet you anything they weren't preparing to have little sweet baby Jesus on the road. I bet they were getting home ready. I bet they were getting their house ready. I bet they were getting their family ready. And yet, here, they're away from home, they're away from the familiar. And then here's another couple crazy things. The infant mortality rate in the first century is 30%. So 3 out of every 10 infants don't make it. So you got that going on in your mind. And then you got the mother mortality rate. And I don't know what that is, but like there is an honest fear going on here, I think, in Mary. That's like, I don't know if I'm going to make it here. I can't think that they felt safe. I felt safe. I can't imagine they felt safe in this moment. And just, I know this might feel too much, but I want us to get this story fresh. Like, Mary doesn't have a doctor to stitch her up afterwards. Right? Like, there's a very real fear of her bleeding out, of her losing her life. of this maybe being her last moment. And now I can hear Mary's screams during birth. I can hear the fear. I can imagine the terror. I can imagine her wishing there were drugs. I can imagine her as she's birthing thinking, it wasn't supposed to be this way. I was supposed to be home. I was supposed to be around family. And we're here. We're stuck in Bethlehem, away from family. We don't even have a decent housing situation. We're here among animals. I can imagine her feeling like this is Caesar's fault. This is Rome's fault that we're here. I cannot imagine this being a silent, serene night. I love that song. I will sing it. I will feel it. But this is not a silent night. And guess who, after he's born, 3 hours later, no matter how mom's feeling, no matter how much in recovery or not in recovery she is, guess who's going to need to eat in 3 hours? Jesus. If I'm Mary in this moment, I'm weeping because I'm thinking of home, I'm thinking of my plans, and I'm thinking of feeling so far away from any of that. Jesus was born in the middle of a mess. Let's keep going. Luke chapter 2, we're going to pick up in verse 8. Nearby in the fields outside of Bethlehem, a group of shepherds were guarding their flocks from predators in the darkness of the night. Suddenly, a message of the Lord stood in front of them, and the darkness was replaced by a glorious light, the shining light of God's glory. And they were terrified. The messenger said, "Don't be afraid. Listen, I bring good news, news of great joy, news that will affect all people everywhere. Today in the city of David, a liberator has been born for you. He is the promised anointed one, the supreme authority. You will know you have found him when you see a baby wrapped in a blanket, lying in a feeding trough." And at that moment, the first heavenly messenger was joined by thousands of other messengers, a vast heavenly choir, and they praised God. The heavenly choir sang to the highest heights of the universe, "Glory to God, and on earth, peace among all people who bring pleasure to God." And as soon as the heavenly messengers disappeared into heaven, the shepherds were buzzing with conversation. And the shepherds said, "Let's rush down to Bethlehem. Right now, let's see what's happening. Let's experience what the Lord has told us about." So they ran into town, and eventually they found Mary and Joseph and the baby lying in the feeding trough. And after they saw the baby, they spread the story of what they had experienced and what had been said to them about this child. And everyone who heard the story couldn't stop thinking about its meaning. And Mary, too, pondered all these events, treasuring each memory in her heart. The shepherds returned to their flocks, praising God for all they had seen and heard, and they glorified God for the way the experience had unfolded, just as the heavenly messenger had predicted. Sometimes I think when we think about the shepherd's arrival later that night, we also picture a serene, quiet, quaint little scene. Like the shepherds arrive, and they see Mary and Joseph and baby Jesus, him just all cuddled up in his swaddling clothes, and they coo and they caw. Aww, how sweet. I just can't imagine that's how it happened. I feel like they would get there, and Mary and Joseph and Jesus would be there, and Joseph would think, "Thank God someone's here to help." And then say, hey guys, I'm glad you're here. Can you clean this up? My wife, she's in pretty rough shape right now. I need some help. Jesus, our baby is lying in the manger, and we need someone to keep the animals at bay so they don't eat out of the place they're normally eating, and so they don't eat our kid. And so can you just, you know, I imagine this to be a chaotic, like, put people to work type of situation. Here's the thing about shepherds. Sanitary? No way. No way. Shepherds were dirty. They were smelly. They were put on the outskirts of society. There's a time and a place in the story of the scriptures where shepherds had a pretty sweet gig. You know, Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." David was a shepherd. Shepherd was a pretty cool job at one time. By the first century, not the case. But the first century shepherds were pushed to the outcast, the margins of society. The Jewish Talmud, which is a collection of Jewish writings around the second century, first century, just around a little after the time of Jesus. There's some quotes in the Talmud that say, if a shepherd falls into a pit, you're not obligated to save him. Right? Like the shepherds were, their testimony was not admittable in a court of law. These guys were in rough shape. They were outcast. But I bet for Mary and Joseph, I bet none of that mattered because some people were there to help. Jesus was born in the middle of a mess. And I have a significant question for us to ponder. You ever wonder who God first revealed the birth of his son to? It wasn't presidents. It wasn't kings in high places. It wasn't the religiously pious and the religiously elite. It wasn't those who had sort of earned their way and God said, here you go, you earned it. It was to the shepherds. It was to the lowest of the low. It was to the outcast. It was to the guys who were worthless in the eyes of the rest of the society. And God said, hey, I got some news for you guys. It was to those who needed the good news. So, after Mina, and then after Tacy was born, 2 days later, we go home. And going home after your first baby is a really steep learning curve. You got to learn. I never changed a diaper in my life till I changed all bunches of her diapers now. But you, if you're a mom, you learn how to feed the baby. We had family in town. My mother-in-law was in town for a couple weeks. My mom was helpful. We had a house. We had a basement room that could host our family. We got to learn how to care for our baby at home. But going home for Mary and Joseph and baby Jesus, it wasn't 2 days later. I don't know how quickly things heal up then, but without the medical resources that we have now, I can only imagine. And Matthew, in his gospel, lets us know about this paranoid Jewish king named Herod, who is so paranoid at the thought of a loss. I got you. Who is so paranoid at the thought of a loss of his power that he's willing to kill off his own family members. Like, he is paranoid to the point of Kim Jong-un. Right? That is his level of paranoia. He would kill family to protect his position. And now, his plan is to kill all the little boys in Bethlehem. So Joseph is warned in a dream, and they don't go home. They go farther away from home. Farther away from the familiar. And they don't return home until after Herod's death. So they don't get to learn at home how to take care of Jesus. And Joe, I imagine that as much as he wants to be home with Mary and Jesus, he has a responsibility to go out and provide and make sure that they have food to eat. So then Mary, on her own, maybe some family are with them, I don't know, but away from home, she's got to figure out how to do this baby thing. I can't imagine. How do you even? Jesus was born in the middle of a mess. And at the risk of saying something really stupid, there's only so much you can do to prepare for the birth of your first baby. Hey, kiddo. There's only so much you can do to prepare for the birth of your first baby. Because when a baby hits the scene, it's a new normal, right? There's a reorientation of your life. Robin did her master's thesis on marital satisfaction and transition to parenthood. And spoiler alert, I mean, if you're married, you probably know, and you have kids, you already know this. But if you don't, her thesis was on how when a first baby comes into the home, your satisfaction in marriage always dips. It's always going down. So just brace yourself. And then she kind of got into the nuances of recovery time and personality characteristics and all that fun stuff. But like when you get a baby, there's an adjustment. There's a new normal. There's a reorientation of your life, right? You can take all the classes. You can try and do all the research, but you can't. It's until the baby's here, there's a new normal. Hey, kiddo. You're trying to say something. You're trying to tell him what's up. My friend Brad says, do you want pain? Do you want heartache? Do you want disappointment? Do you want to make your life more difficult? Have a kid. And then he says, and his eyes almost pop out of his face, and he says, and it's totally worth it. Because, and that ain't that the truth? There is something about life with a baby that gives us a picture of what life with Jesus is like. You want to know what it looks like for Jesus' kingdom to break into our lives and to break into our communities and our world? It looks a lot like a child adjusting to a child at home. When a child hits the scene, everything changes. And when Jesus hits the scene, everything changes. You can prepare as much as you can, but ultimately, there is a new normal. When a child hits the scene, you reorient your life. When Jesus hits the scene, you reorient your life. Will there be unexpected heartaches and pains and sacrifices when a child hits the scene? You bet. Will there be unexpected pain and heartache and sacrifices when you give Jesus control of your life? You bet. But it's totally worth it. In the Nativity, we see Jesus' kingdom literally breaking into our world. It literally comes breaking into our world, but not in the way people were expecting. God's kingdom comes through a baby born to a poor couple, visited by shepherds in a barn, surrounded by animals, laid to sleep in the place where animals feed. Not born in a palace, not born to people in positions of power. This baby in this feeding trough is how God's kingdom breaks into our world. And then he grows up and he begins talking and speaking about a thing called the kingdom of God. And he clarifies what his kingdom is and isn't. And he says his kingdom wasn't going to come with swords and guns and violence. His kingdom wasn't going to come seeking positions of power and influence. But his kingdom was going to come through the giving of his own life on a Roman execution stick, sacrificing himself and then being raised from the dead. Jesus' kingdom comes as Jesus came in the middle of a mess. And his kingdom is for our world. It's breaking in. It's breaking in right now. His kingdom is not some place we escape to while this world just burns to hell. His kingdom is also not some prosperity preacher's paradise. Jesus, imagine the good news this must have been when this begins to sink in and people realize who Jesus is. Right? I don't think it's incidental that Luke writes of a census that Caesar mandates. I don't think it's incidental that Luke reminds us of Quirinius. I don't think it's incidental that Matthew reminds us of King Herod. Because I think they're inviting us to remember how the world was then. How the setting was then. Remember when Rome was calling the shots and Caesar was in charge? You remember when Rome was bringing its peace through violence? You remember when King Herod, that violent, maliciously evil, paranoid leader, was ruling the Jewish territory? You remember when it looked so bad, it looked like darkness was winning? That is when Jesus broke in. Jesus' kingdom comes as he came in the middle of a mess. And I think today we look at the news. We look at the global news and we see things like the shooting at Sutherland Springs. We see things like ISIS. In our own personal lives and in our global lives, it looks dark. Sometimes it didn't look good then and it doesn't look good now. But Jesus' kingdom comes as Jesus came in the middle of a mess. In the middle of Rome's rule and in the middle of Herod's tyranny, God's kingdom comes breaking in through a baby laid in a feeding trough. And it's for our world. I stumbled over a quote recently by someone named Fleming Rutledge. And she writes, "There are theological reasons for observing a serious Advent without being swallowed up prematurely by the Christmas rush. Advent offers an unparalleled opportunity to take a fearless inventory of the darkness in our world and in our hearts into which the true light will come." The true light will come and has come into the darkness of our world, but the true light needs to break into the darkness of our hearts. Jesus' kingdom is for you. For you. Luke 2:10. This is good news, news of great joy, news that will affect all people everywhere. This is news for all people. In the Nativity, what do we learn? In the Nativity, we learn God is not a God who keeps his distance, waiting for people to clean things up. In the Nativity, we learn God is not the God who keeps himself from the irreligious and only reveals himself to those who are pious and religious enough. But we learn in the Nativity that this is for all people. This news is for all people. We see Jesus born in the middle of a mess and Jesus' kingdom breaking into the middle of a mess. We see this news announced to shepherds. We remember Jesus is born and laid in a feeding trough. And we remember in Jesus, God has reached down to us. We who ourselves we're unable to reach up to him. And Jesus reconnects us with God. And Jesus' invitation is for us all. So responding to the invitation of Jesus and his kingdom begins with us confessing our need for Jesus, which means preparing for our new normal, which you can't really prepare for. There's a new normal, a new orientation, just like when a baby comes. Will there be pain? Will there be heartache? Will life become more difficult? Will there be adjusting? Will there be sacrifice? Yes. But it's totally worth it. Matthew reminds us in his gospel. He writes, "She will give birth to a son." This is an angel's announcement. "She will give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins." This is for you. All this took place to fulfill what the Lord had said through the prophet. "The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel," which means God with us. It doesn't mean God will keep his distance until his people get their sin stuff sorted out. Emmanuel doesn't mean he will wait until they prove themselves worthy before granting access to his presence. Emmanuel doesn't mean God far from us. Emmanuel means he will save his people from their sins. It means God is with us in the middle of a mess. When we look at the Nativity is not just descriptive of Jesus' birth. The Nativity is a picture of the way of Jesus. The Nativity is a picture of the way Jesus' kingdom breaks into our lives. The Nativity is a picture of the way Jesus' kingdom breaks into our world. The Nativity pictures God's very methods. It's not just... Yeah, baby. It's not just serendipitous that this happens to be how Jesus was born. This is God's chosen entry point into our world. And when you look at Jesus' life and ministry, and then you look at the ministry of his earliest followers, you see this is the gospel story. God plops right down in the middle of our mess, the mess of our world, and the mess of our lives. And when a darkness looks like it's won the day, and when the powers seem their most powerful, and when hope seems farthest away, light enters. Unexpected, unnoticed by most of the people in the area, except for those on the margins of society. Light enters, born to poor parents. Light enters in a place where no respectable child should be laid. His name is Jesus, and he changed and is changing the world. In Jesus was life, and that life was the light to all mankind. That light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not, will not, cannot, will never overcome it. This is the good news of our gospel. Let's pray. Jesus, we thank you for how your birth story reminds us so many things about who you are and what you've come to do. When it feels dark, in you was life, and that life was a light to all mankind. Thank you that your light always overcomes our darkness. You, Jesus, have been raised victoriously from the grave. Thank you.